welcome to episode number 14 of the 10HP Broadcast, the show that follows our game club as we play through random games from the past few years. I'm your host, Chris Peters, and with me today are Anthony Nguyen.
Hello.
Paul Main.
Hey, guys.
Ricky Flint.
Hello.
And Glorious Tran.
Hi.
All right, just a warning to new listeners, this podcast is not concerned with spoilers, so if you haven't played this game, you may get something spoiled for you. And the game this month is Might and Magic Hero 6 or Heroes of Might and Magic 6?
Yeah, it's Might and Magic Heroes 6.
Might and Magic, in subtitle, Heroes 6.
Might and Magic Heroes.
What was 5 titled?
Heroes of Might and Magic.
Okay, so they did change
it. They changed it, yeah.
Okay.
It's weird.
It is.
It was just, it has to do with the branding, because people weren't, I guess people weren't associating Heroes of Might and Magic versus Might and Magic as the brand.
Right.
Heroes.
It's weird to have the subtitle be, or the number be attached to the subtitle. Right? It's like, not, there's Might and Magic 10, which just came out.
Yeah.
And then there's Heroes 6, which is, you know, pretty old, but what we're playing. It's weird. It's Might and Magic nothing, Heroes 6. And Might and Magic 10. Anyway.
Well, did Ubisoft always own, like, the Might and Magic brand?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Anthony would know the most about the Might and Magic history, as he is a follower of this series.
Yeah, I've forgotten a lot of things.
Okay.
New Age Computing, brand, I don't know, Brand New World Computing. It was not Ubisoft back then.
Okay.
Well, so, Anthony was the one who thought that Heroes of Might and Magic came out before King's Bounty.
Yeah.
Okay, so Anthony, why did you pick this game?
Because I like the Heroes of Might and Magic series. 2 on, and then, I don't know, 4 and 5 seemed kind of, you know, blended together with me, but I started falling out of the series at that point. And then, you know, there's 6, and I'm like, okay, it's on sale, and I'll buy it. And then it was on sale again, and we had this club. I was like, okay, I'll buy it for others. It'll be my pick.
Okay, so you played 5 and 4, but less.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was under the impression that you had only played 3, or that's something, you know, you've been lapsed, a lapsed fan, but I guess not.
When did 5 come out?
I don't know.
When did 6 come out?
I don't know.
It was a couple years ago.
It doesn't know a whole lot, apparently.
Well, it's been, like, the last patch was in 2012, and that's kind of when they, I think the studio went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Expansion came out recently.
Yeah.
The latest expansion was
Pirate 1 or whatever, yeah.
Not the Pyre one, the Shades of Darkness, the dungeon.
Okay. Yeah, I know the studio went bankrupt, but I don't know who made the expansion, if they were just waiting to release it. Anyway, so what'd you think? An improvement?
I think the game got very simplified from what I remembered it being. Like, fewer resources, the logistics thing, you know, it's, you know, even though you still have to caravan your troops to your heroes, you know, it's much easier now than it was in the past.
So simplified in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way, in a bad way, I don't know. It's felt too simple to me where, it didn't feel like the old games.
Okay.
And combat felt like, it seemed to lack strategy and tactics, like what I, you know, from the past. It seemed like, you know, things were really just send your armies clashing against one another. Like, there wasn't as much thought involved.
Okay. Paul, what do you think of this?
I think that it needs to be reinvented. Because, I don't know, when I was playing the game, it felt like the game that I played, I guess when I played 2 or 3, I'm not sure which one it was that I actually played a long time ago. But it felt like that, and I felt like it's out of date, and... I mean, they might have done some simplification, but, you know, if I'm comparing it to, say, XCOM, which was resimplified as well, that felt refreshing and good and new, and I kept wanting to constantly go back to that game. And this game, I did not want to go back to at all, and it just felt stale and old.
Ricky.
So I never played the previous incarnation, so I actually enjoyed the game, having no reference point. It was somewhat simple. I definitely think there could have been some added complexity in certain elements, but I thought there was sufficient talents and spells on the hero side. It just everything else was kind of simplified. It would be nice to have mixed, you know, orc troops or human troops or undead troops.
You can, though.
You can, but you're not... The way the game's resources and recruiting is designed, you'll never optimize your team, your armies by trying to split up your units. So.
Yeah, you want to match your hero.
Yeah. So, you know, like the undead guy can only heal undead guys.
Yeah.
So that pretty much excludes having anybody else. And then the humans probably mix and match a little bit easier, but they couldn't heal an undead guy.
Well, it depends on which faction.
Well, it's actually tied to trait, living and undead. So
there's, it would be fun to be able to mix and match more. I actually did that the first game and then realized I was just slowing myself down.
Yeah.
Because I was getting, I had three cities doing three different things. And
Well, the morale is a big thing.
Yeah. Not really. Not in this game. No.
Morale?
Like, it was, you took a, when you do mixed factions in the previous games, like, if you had a negative morale, you would actually, your troops would freeze. They would skip a turn. In this game, like, the I mix troops and the penalty is so minuscule and morale is a percentage.
They'll do lower damage.
Oh, see, no, morale is just a percentage of if they get to get a bonus turn or if they miss a turn, and that, you know, the morale going from 8 to 4 is just a 4% decrease, and that's all it is. It's just a percentage.
Okay.
So yeah, and I guess being having a fresh perspective, I enjoyed the game.
Glorious.
Mixed bag. I mean, it in some ways it felt like the old Heroes of Might and Magic. In some ways, I felt like they were trying to just throw everything in there. Like, they threw in the Diablo-esque item sets, which I never got a complete set. Only one time did I get two pieces of a set of 8, and I've never completed a whole set. The talent trees, kind of stolen from WoW-ish. Let's see, the random items that you could find as well. But, I mean, at the base of it, I still like the game, but it's just certain complexities that made it more difficult to understand. Like, every time I had a fight, I had to go refresh the listing of different traits. There used to be less traits per monster. And now it's like, okay, this one has this trait where it says it can retaliate unlimited times. This one says it will deal damage to all your creatures. You know, it's just a bunch of different things. And it's kind of like they let some designer go in, well, what about this? What about this? And so there's just a ton of stuff.
My
and so
gosh. It's like, I want to jump on that comment. Like, yeah, every single unit has they're so unique because they have so many different traits and everything. But in the end, I don't think it really mattered to me.
Right. Like, there were just some traits that were just kind of useless anyways. Yeah.
Well, some traits were just ugly. Like, one of them, I think, did like a percentage of your stack's health.
Yeah. And other ones are like, oh, the, like,
I think they gave flavor and they gave like character to the units.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that, you know, I played a skirmish game with Inferno faction. And all of the guys are resistant to fire and
more susceptible
to light. And that's just, you know, that's two traits on every single character that, yes, okay, it factors in. But it doesn't factor in that often.
It's more flavor.
Yes. It's more descriptive of the race than it is an actual game mechanic.
But they'll say, for instance, the Infernal Demon, when they're big units, has unlimited retaliation, which is kind of neat. You basically park him.
Well, I'm not saying they don't have other traits that actually matter. I'm just saying that lots of them are just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, each unit basically has one skill that sets them apart from everyone else.
Right.
And even though they have like 8 traits to them, those 7 really don't matter.
Right. Yeah.
They don't matter.
But they're still mixed all together so that you have to, you know, mouse over and read them all.
Yeah, and some of them are repeat.
Let's talk more about traits later. Yeah. Let's get through the around the table what you thought. Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Done for now.
Just simply, I thought the game was boring. I don't have the history as well. I think I played Heroes of Might and Magic 2 or 3. I remember kind of like a golden white box with a knight on the front, but I'm thinking it was 3.
Four.
Anyway, I've only played one before. Didn't really play it a lot. Don't really know how the mechanics go, so I'm kind of new to it. But ultimately, I felt, you know, like I quit the game, my game playing sessions within a half hour to an hour of starting. I'm like, okay, I've played this enough, and I gave up. And I can't really put my finger. I don't think anything was really wrong with it. It's just
it's uninspired. Didn't
draw me in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, boring.
You know what I want to add to that? It's like this game, even though it was a turn-based strategy game, I didn't get the feeling that, you know, I didn't have that one more turn problem with this game.
Right.
You know, I actually just feel like, oh, I could quit right here. I don't need to continue playing.
That's such a bad feeling for one of these games. Because, yes. I mean, I have that like addictive personality where I need to keep playing, mm-hmm. especially turn-based strategy, because I love that kind of genre.
Well, I think the thing that happens in the typical like one more turn thing is every turn you're accomplishing things. But you know, I was playing my last game, the skirmish game. I was playing and I went like, oh, I need some units. Okay, well, I'm going to skip through 2 weeks. And
just run, guys.
Accomplish nothing. Ugh. Just I'm just moving, doing maintenance tasks, and that are not fun. And would I go? Oh, I need one more battle. I'm going to fight that in 3 weeks, so I should really quickly do all the maintenance. No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, playing the game was a chore, right? Because you're trying to advance, but you're trying to collect your troops and everything. And if you're playing a skirmish game with many different opponents. You have to run back and retake stuff or defend your castle.
Well, right.
And
the other thing I want to add is just that the way that this game and much of the predecessors worked was that you had to go. Attrition's really bad. You will never ever want to go into a fight where it's even, where you're like there's an even chance because you're going to take so much heavy damage, and by the end of the battle, your armies are going to be severely depleted. So you want to come in overwhelmingly, with the odds in your favor, so that you take as minimal casualties as possible so you can keep your troops moving, because this moment you start fighting even battles, you're going to be run out of steam. It's just kind of like one even battle loses a bunch of guys, then you go to the next one, it's like I'm going to lose more. It's a cascading slippery slope.
The interesting thing about this, and it's something that I didn't realize because I felt the same way, I was telling Anthony as I played the campaign, I never fought a battle unless the difficulty of the battle was low or trivial.
Yep.
Because at that point I wouldn't really lose that much, I wouldn't get set back. The only battle I fought that was actually hard was the last battle of the campaign.
At
that point, I don't care.
Just got to win.
But an interesting happened when I was playing skirmish. I ended up getting attacked. Guy came out of the fog of war, and he was con deadly to me. So he got me, killed all my units, and then just went and took over my base. And at that point, you can't recover because it's In a trivial or low situation, you lose practically nothing. In a balanced situation, you lose a fair bit. But in the opposite situation, he loses practically nothing, and then that's like game over in a multiplayer game. So absolutely, it had very serious consequences the way those battles are scaled.
Mm-hmm. But I agree with Chris though, in the sense that you go through these phases of I got stuff to do, or I don't have enough movement points to do what I need to do, and then moments of I just got to skip like the next 2 or 3 weeks worth of turns so that I can get the proper units or wait for stuff to build correctly.
Okay, let's keep talking about that more, but first I want to go into just a broad overview of how this game plays. Basically, it is a kind of a city conquering simulation war game. You have a hero who's an RPG fantasy hero, and he has gear. You can have one or more, right? And he takes armies of units and travels around attacking cities, attacking resource locations to collect resources for those cities, collecting little resource chunks, fighting neutral monsters, that sort of thing, going out and leveling up. And each of the battles takes place in a turn-based strategy battle sub-game where there's a grid and guys move around.
But not your hero.
But not your hero. Your hero just stands back and he's the commander and gives orders and casts spells.
And he attacks and just...
Yeah, it's like one attack per turn.
Depends on what you want to do.
No, I know.
He does there's initiative a bunch of things, but... and everybody's got special abilities and that's basically the game. So then... okay, so what were we talking about? We were talking about...
Passing turns,
skipping turns. So, you take your turns every week.
Well, when we talk about weeks, that weeks is the
sub-factor turn.
Yeah, each time you take a turn is one day. So when we talk about skipping weeks, the reason why we talk about weeks is because your creatures, the amount of creatures you can recruit or pick up or resources reload
at the start of the week. Right. So you want to get to that next week check mark and get more units. So maybe you need 2 weeks worth of production.
And the bad guys regenerate every week as well.
Yeah, right. That's why the game takes longer and longer the further into the game you get. Because as you're knocking out players, there's still fresh players with fresh armies, and yours has been depleted,
right,
taking out that one player. and unfortunately you can still win because the AI is stupid, so that's why you have to build up and take them out. If they're smarter, you know, they can take you out.
So there's another mechanic to this game, which kind of seemed like the only reason I would want to play, and that is the online
dynasty system.
Basically, as you're playing the game, you are gaining experience for your characters, but an equal amount of experience goes into your profile. And then your profile levels up and gives you access to more and more rewards that you can unlock outside of the game that are common across all your plays. And there are new champions, new heroes that you can use. You can use portraits for your thing. You can...
Dynasty weapons.
Dynasty weapons are a type of item that you can equip that level up. The more you use them, the better they get.
Dynasty traits actually affect your entire game.
Right at the start of the game, you select some traits which give you some perk in some way, and you get a bigger selection of those by buying them. So that was an interesting system, and that, you know, that's the replay value right there. Mm. It's if you enjoy the game, I guess, you know, then it's just you could just keep playing skirmishes over and over.
Yeah, leveling up all the dynasty weapons you've collected from playing.
But this is another reason campaign. To play the game is to go collect.
Yeah, that's like that's the only reason I would keep playing that game is to go and collect all the dynasty weapons by playing through the entire campaign mode and then maxing out every weapon by playing, you know, skirmish games.
Right.
Do those help you in multiplayer?
They can, but you can turn them off.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So that's all part of the options, you know. Do you want to allow dynasty weapons? Do you want to allow dynasty... I think dynasty traits might be separate. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're modifiers to the game. Do you want to allow it? Yes or no?
No.
So one of the things that this dynasty system... oddities of it is that it's tied to being online.
Yeah.
Did anyone feel that was a necessary exchange?
That was unnecessary because I was unable to connect to Uplay for some reason, and which had all my save games as well. So when I wanted to play Might & Magic, Heroes 6, you know, I had to start over from scratch. I had to play the tutorial. I did not because I just said, okay, I'm not going to play today.
Really? I never had connectivity issues. When I was playing Assassin's Creed 2, I had lost save games, actually incompatible save games between Mac and PC, but actual connectivity. This was after our initial connectivity issue.
That's a different problem. When I was actually finally able to play, I completed the tutorial. Into the Necropolis campaign, and then... In the middle of a battle, like I told you about my first time fighting the Phoenix neutral creatures. That was a long, lengthy battle because I had to actually think about how I wanted to do that. It was a fun battle. And then I got disconnected, and that battle was not saved, and I had to restart. After I was able to, another day, I was able to, I had to restart that battle. That sucked.
So our initial... problem that at least affected three of us. I don't know if it affected Ricky. Okay, so it affected four out of five of us.
Who didn't affect?
It didn't affect Glorious. For some reason, he just worked. But he did something weird with his thing.
Yeah, mine, I actually had to go reinstall the Uplay. So basically, I had the old Uplay for when we did Assassin's Creed 2. Yeah. And so when I started up, here's my magic. It just went crazy, for lack of a better term. It would just start spinning, and it would get to the screen and wouldn't do anything. Eventually, I went to the message board. The message board said, just download the latest version directly from there instead of trusting the Steam version. And once I did that and reinstalled everything kind of clicked back in.
Hmm.
But it was kind of odd because it was like, you have to go reinstall the whole entire Uplay from the very start.
Yeah. I feel it's a little bit beating a dead horse saying that Uplay sucks, but...
Uplay sucks.
The rest of Uplay does suck, and the reason in particular for this event was we all installed the game, we entered our keys, they accepted our keys, said that we own this game in Uplay. Then when you launch the game and you connect to their Conflux network, it asks you again for your key, or basically says, you don't have any content license, you don't have any of the expansions, you don't even have the base game, so you can click here and buy it. Or you can enter your key to say that you already own it, and if you enter that key again, it's already been redeemed, so you don't get access to any of your content. And as a result, we couldn't play the moment that we installed the game. Even though, you know, we purchased the game a long time ago, we didn't we didn't register until that day, and we just couldn't play that day. So I submitted a ticket. I don't know.
Me too.
Everyone, and I guess it just resolves itself over time.
Maybe no one ever wrote me back.
No. Right. Did you leave it open?
I didn't close it.
Okay, I went and closed it, saying this fit solved itself.
No, I never closed mine.
No one ever wrote you back.
I haven't gotten anything.
Oh my god! So you play support sucks as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
you probably have dozens of people writing them every single day saying, this is missing. This is not working.
I don't think, well, not for this game.
That's what custom support's supposed to do.
Right.
When someone has a problem, you're supposed to respond to their problem.
I know, but they're probably just fucked. I mean, from what I hear from Steam,
well, maybe a product needs a little QA then, because you shouldn't be getting that many.
Oh, they do. I mean, it's not just like Heroes of Might and Magic, anything you play. I mean, Assassin's Creed, like, well, for example, I wanted to go back and try Assassin's Creed 2 with my new system upgrade that I just had recently. I logged in, all my saves are deleted, gone. I'm just like, great. That's totally bites.
Huh, I haven't checked. I'd be pretty bummed if my saves got deleted.
I know, especially because Assassin's Creed has so many freaking collectibles. You can just spend forever.
Oh, that sucks.
I'll just skip straight to 4.
That's why I never... uncheck the box that says upload this to the cloud.
Well, no, but it's Uplay. It's not the Steam cloud. It's Uplay.
I know. You can turn off uploading saves to the cloud in Uplay.
Only
the like 3 games that they left it on the online requirement. Mm-hmm. Only those games, and
okay.
I doubt you have most of them.
I have to make sure I turn that off next time. But yeah, it was disappointing. I was like, all right, never going back and playing Assassin's Creed 2 anymore.
Yeah. Time to move on anyway. Assassin's Creed 4.
No, moving to Brotherhood and Revelations.
Oh my god.
Then 3.
Yeah, I heard 3 was the worst Revelations, maybe the second worst. Brotherhood, maybe.
I heard 4 was
might
good.
Be the best.
Back to Might and Magic.
Yeah, let's talk about Might and Magic. So, the combat system. This is one of the reasons I found the game boring. I thought that the combat was way too basic. I mean, yes, everybody's got these traits, which makes them a little bit different, and it's interesting to see. But you only can take a max of 7 units into any battle.
Yep.
And the grid is, like...
tiny.
Well, it's big.
You can get to anyone.
It's too big for 7
two turns, basically, right?
Yeah, it's too short. The melee guys can close
within
basically 2 turns. And if you rig it, you know, stagger your guy at the end, you can basically make it in 1 turn.
Right. So there's, I don't know, it's like 10 by 20, maybe, yeah, whatever, the grid, something like that. So there's too much space for this number of units. Like, there's no way to guard any units or anything like that. Okay. The guys move so far that they move like half the board. So really, it's almost they're almost crossing it in 1 turn anyway. Yep. There's no such mechanic like an area of influence or zone of control kind of thing where you could block people from getting away. There's almost no terrain. I mean, occasionally there's some random terrain set up. There, and
sometimes
I saw rocks.
Random terrain can screw over your big guys.
Right.
Yeah. Also, one of the things that I wasn't sure in 4 or 5 that was added in this one was like there's terrain that actually adds special bonuses or penalties. Like,
yeah, so I saw rocks.
Yeah, like the luck.
That
laser thing.
That gave you cover if you stand next to it, which means you're not attacking anybody. Well, you're just hiding behind a rock.
The cover. No, there's a couple.
Yeah. There's a couple. Yeah. There's like a statue that puts a beam on the ground.
Right, so
that's luck.
Like there's like 2 squares that you can stand in to get
a mana one.
Yeah. And there's a mana one that which comes on the ground. You stand on it and all your spells cost 5 less.
Then you get 5 mana.
Or 10 mana each turn.
Yeah.
Something like you get mana back.
Yeah. Anyway, they're
I thought they were insignificant.
Yeah.
Even the rocks were insignificant.
Yeah.
And then the lack of zone of control really made it so that movement wasn't like it wasn't a factor really.
Wasn't a factor unless
you're
a big guy.
How you played the game,
yeah.
Right?
The factor was who gets to go last,
which means you only have like the biggest determinants aren't even the stats of the guys. It's like how many guys you have
and who gets attacked first.
I mean, right? And who gets to attack first for sure. And then that pretty much decides the battles.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's all numbers.
Yep.
It's,
I know.
It was boring.
It's so disappointing. I mean, like you feel like there's no reason. I should just.
Why have this tactical battle?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like in the old ones, I mean, being hex based was a lot more strategic too than in the previous ones.
Mm-hmm.
And there was zone of control in the previous ones too.
I don't understand why you wouldn't have that. It seems like it's crucial to actually be able to, you know, win a losing battle or something. I mean, just have some kind of effect on.
Well, for the melee guys, because basically, I went. Other than just having like one melee guy to kind of be like a counter charge unit, I bought a whole ton of the ranged guys and just fired, you know, keep on shooting with ranged guys. And then the melee guy was just there just to, you know, like to counter attack anyone who got into the line.
Yeah, but what if somebody played differently next to your ranged guy?
What the melee guy's there for.
No, but what faction were you playing? Because sometimes.
The Sanctuary.
Okay, sometimes I don't feel like range is the way to go. Like when I was playing,
it's only good, I think, when you're sieging the castles or whatever.
That depends on defending.
The Sanctuary range is actually pretty decent.
There's some very specific units that have range ability is just
So how did you focus on range? This was a problem I had. I wanted to focus on range too, but the production is such that you're forced to have a balanced army.
Sanctuary has a really good mage who. Ignores range penalties. And that, I mean, I play Sanctuary, and I tried to do the melee thing, but I didn't use melee.
Your other units?
There's a wall of melee guys.
Okay.
But there's just two super stacks of range people.
Because these range folks, like, especially Sanctuary, works off combo. Like, one of them actually gives them a drenched status, which you hit with the ice or lightning, which gives them extra damage.
And the other one is the lightning element.
I guess I'm not really hitting home with what I'm trying to say, is that you cannot customize your army because your production is so limited to this weekly production.
Whether you bring your melee guys forwards or keep your melee guys in the back. That's the only thing I could...
Yeah.
So I always buried my range guys in the back.
Uh-huh.
I would summon something next to their range guys, and they would spend three turns fighting it, and I'd just be shooting the entire time. My melee guys would not come forward.
And were you in might or magic?
I was in magic.
So you were slowing down the other team too?
Yeah, I was healing them. So the little element that I summoned was sitting next to their range guys, so their range guys couldn't engage.
Mm-hmm.
And my melee guys never came forward to give advantage. I was sitting there trying to do as much range damage.
One of the range stacks also has in Sanctuary has a cool ability which sets up like a ice minefield. Which is great for anyone trying to walk across it.
I never use that. I just use them to attack instead.
Mm-hmm. No, but the ice minefield's great because it actually hits every single time as they go through. They walk through the first square, boom, it gets hit, and they start losing huge amounts of health.
See, I feel like you guys even had more options in terms of crowd control because you know, every battle I fought in, either I decimated the guys before they got to my ranged, or they always got to my ranged and prevented them from doing ranged attacks. They always just ran over there and tried to attack him.
We didn't play enough, I think.
I guess not.
Because I had the same experience.
Hey, I told Chris this before. Like, you can win those modest and severe battles. Those are the battles where you got to think.
Yeah, you can win them. I didn't. Yeah.
Minimal losses, you have to be very good about
using you don't
spells.
Want to fight them because they're way too costly.
No.
To fight them and lose off the same stack.
Yes.
That's the real problem. Is you have to be like, this guy is my tank. And I need to figure out how he's the only one who takes damage.
Yes.
So my healing or whatever I'm doing is optimized that one.
Yeah, I'm still fighting modest and severe and trying to minimize my losses. I'm not trying to, you know, avoid the battle completely until I
have overwhelming odds.
Yeah. You can still win those battles with minimal losses with some thought. And that's kind of where the game is fun at times, but mostly
healing
it's
and regeneration. Those are big things. Those are the first two spells.
It's too much.
Well, I feel like maybe I didn't get into the healing mechanics too much.
Yeah, because you heal it, guys. Like you know.
I was playing the Necromantic campaign, and they do have a heal, but it's weak. Like lose. You know,
it gets stronger.
Yeah.
Eventually, it's actually kind of overwhelmingly stupid.
Yes.
Once you get like the three skulls. It's like that.
It's broken.
It's broken,
huh?
Unless you face Phoenix.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then your little.
So there's a criticism here, and that is that why did they let you know if that's where the game gets to in the end? You know, you have to play the first 10 hours that you know we played, and it didn't really seem like that.
I actually think it was made the game more challenging?
Well, did you
at the beginning you don't have
all the campaign mods, or right. You guys play the skirmish? Because I completely skipped the campaign. I played skirmishes the whole time through.
I only played the campaign until the last day.
Oh.
And the last day I played the skirmish, and I'm like, wait, I have 7 units. Whereas before I only had 4.
Yeah, and then like, your 7th unit, you couldn't even upgrade to its.
I mean, so a lot of these criticisms have to do with the fact that we were playing like with gimped, you know, units.
But I did play this game.
I know, for sure.
It's a long game.
17 hours. I mean, but I played a lot of this game. I should have gotten exposed to this.
The campaign is a tutorial.
It's a long tutorial.
You pick a faction, and then
I finished all 3 maps on the Underguys, and it must have taken me 50
all 3
hours.
Maps? Wait, like 3 scenarios where it actually switches
maps? I actually finished the whole Necromancer. I got to the end.
Yeah. Wow.
That is so there's amazing. 3 maps, and it must have taken me 50 hours.
Wait, I don't understand. Wait,
did you get the map play reward that was for 40 U points or whatever? Okay.
Ricky. So wait. There's 3 maps. Each map has different missions in them?
Yeah. So there's one. The first map is whatever. The second map is do this other thing. And the third map is the finale. And you... I mean, no one cares, but you kill the angel at the end.
Okay.
He ends up being the bad guy.
Spoilers.
By map, you mean like...
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
So the first one is you get resurrected and you're trying to figure out why you did it.
And there's 4 missions on that map.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then the next map,
you go on the first map.
And you come along and you figure out that you want to... I forget what it is. You're doing something. You're Spider Queen or something.
Yeah, so you turn evil.
Wow.
No, so you figure out... No, but it takes like 15 hours per map.
No. Oh, yeah, yeah. Per mission,
whatever you call it.
Yeah.
So but the end of the... Jeez. The entire end of the thing is 3 or 4, and it takes you like 50 hours.
My gosh. Hours. So you have like, what, 70 hours logged or something?
Probably.
And that's only just Necromancer?
That's just Necromancer.
Oh, my gosh. I'm 40 crazy. Hours.
I didn't check my time. I mean, I spent a whole lot of time.
I feel bad. I only have 10 hours.
I'm impressed you get through that much bad dialogue.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
So what do you think of the story, having finished it?
So, cliche.
So the story was predictable, but, I mean, it was driven enough... Where I was like, I can live with the story.
Yeah, see, that's why I wanted to play campaign to get through the story, see,
right?
And then all the different factions and accruing my dynasty at the same time.
And then it's kind of interesting. So I played. I started the second one. I get whoever they are, but they do have. I mean, they're linked, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the girl that you kill the necromancer girl in the next one. You see the campaign like the whole story in sections. So the first one is just her.
Yeah, and she's one of the daughters of the...
So you see her, but in the second one, whatever that one is, I forget, the guy who actually stabs her and kills her, you play
her brother.
So you play her brother, so you see her at the beginning, and then you talk to the same angel guy, and he's trying to set you up to do the same thing. So you see the story's kind of interwoven, mm-hmm. but it takes a lot of time to see the...
Yeah, story-wise, each faction is a kid of the guy you played in the tutorial. Yeah.
And they were kind of, I guess, semi-simultaneous stories.
Well, that's a redeeming quality.
Yeah.
That seems like an actually interesting story. And yes, it was predictable and kind of cliche, but you know that's an interesting telling.
Yeah,
tying it together.
See, I don't know. I started playing the campaign, and I was like, by the second,
did you get past the tutorial campaign?
No,
see,
I mean,
I've got past that. Yeah. When you get to pick a campaign, that's when they start telling the story.
I said, you know what? I'm here to play Might and Magic Heroes. I mean, I don't need a story. I just want to go
4 hours a map. And 55 minutes. That is the time it took me to do the second map of the tutorial.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous. No,
but you get once you play enough of the campaign, you figure out how to play the
campaign. Yeah, right. That's what I think. Like once you learn, that's what I like about the campaign. Like you know, they're teaching about the faction, but then it becomes a chore to play
through.
It's a chore.
I mean, you know like which units do what and you know when to...
So I broke away from the campaign to actually play skirmish so I could actually try out some other factions. And once I figured out how the factions work, you know, then it turns into a chore again. Like, okay, now I know how to set up this army. Like, I first one I played with Sanctuary. Like, okay, I like these range units. I tried using the Naga guys with the swords. I thought they'd be awesome in melee.
No, they're not.
They suck. Yeah. And then
you have a limited retaliatory strike, which...
They don't... I would figure that for a big unit, they have a lot of hit points. They don't. They actually fall
they're moderate.
Easily.
They're moderate. But they actually have more damage than the dragon.
See, but the dragon I like because, you know, he flies and then he leaves a little a cloud trail and all your guys get to act again if they end in that spot. So you could go behind cover and shoot.
He's like a luck dragon.
The Kirin. But anyway, so I mean, once I figure out how the army works, I'm like, okay, now I know how to use this army, and then I'm just playing the waiting game with the other factions. Like, okay, I'm slowly taking them out and running back to take back what they took.
Oh, one of the players. Things that was kind of interesting in the skirmish mode that was new to this series that I didn't know before was that the resource camps near your city, you can never steal. As soon as you take them over and you walk away,
you can. There's abilities you can do.
It's not worth the investment.
You can sabotage and stuff. But I'm saying, in prior games, if you took them over, you actually had to physically go back and reclaim them.
Okay. Not only that, you had to go each week. You had to go and collect the resources from there.
No. Well, depends on which version. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying in this one, the ones that are right around your city, you can never lose them.
Yeah, that's why I think the game got really simple and it focused on just the heroes.
I don't complain.
No longer map
that's
control.
Fine.
I complain a little bit because of the way the resources are scattered around the map. Like in one of my games, I never had enough stone.
Okay.
And so it was just like, I'm sitting here trading every week, just trying to trade it really at disadvantageous rate to get stone so I could build the next stuff in my city.
In the last campaign mission that I played, before the last battle, I was building up for weeks and weeks, and I didn't want the guy to build up as well. So I hired 4 heroes to go sit on his resources and prevent him from getting anything that he could build up with. But you can lock it down that way. You can lock it down by sitting on it. But yeah, once you walk away, they get it back. So
yeah, you could do that in campaign mode because the AI doesn't ever leave.
Oh, by running randomly, if you finish the campaign, you get a full set of
outfit. Oh, nice. But yeah, I never encountered it in random. I got duplicates of stuff, but I never got a full set.
I don't know. The current game I'm playing with 8 players, Brave New World, I forgot the map name, but I don't know. I think the game does gear towards giving you a full item set because I have something called an assassin set. And in the previous game, I think you had to go collect it from other heroes too.
I disagree because, like I said, I've gotten 2 of the same piece of armor.
What map were you playing on Skirmish? Because I went to play Skirmish and I started off on the little 2-player small dual map. Mm-hmm. And basically you just run around and collect a bunch of things and level up really fast and I guess then go fight the guy immediately.
Oh yeah, the 2-player maps aren't great. I'm playing on a 6-player map just because it gives it a little bit more variety, a little more option, a little more breathing room.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that you can either have more players or not, but I mean, it gives you ample opportunities to fight new trolls and to gain gear and equipment. On the 2-player maps, I think there's one that's basically the equivalent of like 2 forts in Team Fortress, where your base here, base on one side, and it's a straight
you
line to the
stuff,
base, and the other
build
one
build up and then attack.
And then you attack.
Yeah, that was the experience I had with the initial one, and then I'm like, I want to actually go conquer other cities and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
you need a bigger map. The other thing that was kind of weird about this one was the concept of forts in this game. Forts are kind of neat, but do nothing because they only provide extra place for you to buy stuff. But defending them is terrible because you can never upgrade a fort. You can never do anything with a fort. It just has its basic wall. And so unless you park a hero there, the enemy will come back and reclaim the whole thing.
See, I know. I was saying the forts in this game are waypoints, so they can teleport to them and then go collect resources or go connect to an go conquer stuff from there.
They're bait.
But you leave a guy in there.
And he goes out and gets it. And then you go attack his base.
The worst part is going through, collecting a fort, converting it from whatever opposite faction to your faction, and then leaving it or having someone sneak in and then reconvert it back.
Yeah, there's no reason to convert the fort unless they're producing
unit. They're producing units. The units
only if they have a dwelling.
Yeah, they have a dwelling.
Well, you can convert the dwelling.
Well, no, but lots of them just have gold or wood or ore, and that.
And that you should just not bother converting it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was complaining to Anthony the other day about conversion at all. Converting the cities and destroying buildings should not be an instantaneous process. Because I got in this thing with the AI a lot where they would take the city and then leave, and then I'd take the city back and then leave, and then they take the city back and then leave. And every time I would take the city back, I'd be like, convert it to my thing, build my special racial buildings, and then it'd go get destroyed.
Just those racial buildings.
Just the racial buildings, and the conversion would have to happen again. But I mean, mm-hmm. they don't even own it that long. They just, like, one day they convert it to...
Hey, they're spending money to do it, too.
One day it's demons, the next day it's...
It's ridiculous, right?
I don't know. I
imagine being the town folk.
Right?
You have to, like, put on a different outfit.
You have to dig a hole down the molten lava.
Conversion is a new thing. Conversion is a new thing, and
fill
it just...
in the hole.
It lets you just build your big, your, you know, single faction big army.
Right.
So one of the things I wanted to kind of talk about was the different factions and what folks play, because I pretty much played Sanctuary. I kind of like them and kind of like the idea of their combo, and they're pretty much, you know, range, spellcasting, water, ice, lightning kind of a faction.
Oh, man.
But what did you guys try? I heard Chris said he tried Infernal. Ricky did Necromantic.
Well, I played mostly the Necromancers because that was the campaign, but I did try the Inferno.
I did Stronghold, but when you mentioned Magic... What I felt this game really took away was that everyone can learn just about every spell. The faction doesn't matter. It's just that when you're a certain faction, two elements are not available to you.
Yes, and then well,
so basically everyone can learn Ice Bolt and Lightning Bolt.
Still, except for you have two factions. Things that you don't that are damaging to you know do bonus damage or you can't learn. But there's also should be one or two that are really kind of sinking. At least that's what I found with like Sanctuary. The Air and water magic.
Mm-hmm. Air and water magic, which are also available to Necropolis and Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And
I said, did anyone try else? Like you said, mentioned Stronghold. Did anyone try, what was the other one? So there's Sanctuary, Infernal, Necromantic, Stronghold, and there's one more. I thought there was five.
There's five.
Well, if you're playing the campaign, I mean, the only way to really swap your faction is to play Skirmish.
They got rid of the Arcane...
Oh, well, we can find out another time, I suppose. But still, what did you think of Infernal, or what did you think of Stronghold, Anthony?
Stronghold was a melee faction. They have the guys who can close the distance, charge, and...
Is that the orcs?
Are the orcs.
Okay, yeah. I don't know them by their...
The big guys, yeah, who just, you know, they charge and
yeah.
do not...
They were entertaining, though.
Yeah, no retaliation on the charge, and they close the distance. Well, they don't get any bonus movement, but they... No. You know, the maps are small. Melee guys can get in there really quickly. The range is lacking in that army.
They got that little shaman guy.
Which guy
carves and stuff on the ground.
He just curses a unit so that they
take... Sure Stronghold? That Stronghold was like the basic human one where they had like the crossbow guys.
No, mm-hmm. That's the Haven.
Hey, oh, so that's the other faction. Oh, Haven.
Okay. Yeah, no, Stronghold are the orcs, and they have their big units are the Cyclops who don't die.
I never got to Cyclops.
Okay. Yeah, they withstand pain, so all the damage you do, they stave off until the next turn.
Yeah.
Oh, God, those guys are annoying. I fought them.
Yeah. I fought them, too, I was like, why aren't they dying? I don't know.
And then you read the description, like, oh.
Oh. Yeah. Now I have them myself, like, it's actually really annoying. So I was like, I'm going to wait to heal. Oh, I forgot, they're going to die at the start of their turn.
Yeah, the healing mechanic, you know, I guess it gets better, but it was so irritating. Like, you would have... When I was playing the tutorial, I would have the healing girls, whatever they are, and they have two casts of the healing. But if the battle ends, they can't heal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even get to use
timing.
It.
Yeah, you have to have time. So,
well, that's dumb timing, though. It's like, oh, I'm going to extend the battle just so I can heal my guys.
Yeah, or the regeneration.
Lane mechanic.
Yeah, see, yes. No, it's attrition. If you're trying to save off attrition, you know, that's... What you have to,
that's the point, though. Everyone here is doing that, right?
See, I think except because
why can't you do that after the battle?
Healing is available to everybody. Healing that actually resurrects people. I don't think that was in the previous games.
Haven, yeah.
No, I'm talking in the previous Heroes of Might and Magic.
Anthony's right. In the prior games, you could actually heal you only up to... like
just heal one guy.
One guy. So like, say that you had a dragon with 200 hit points, and you got down to... You could heal only that guy.
Yeah, you're not going to heal him, you know, you're not going to heal 300 and resurrect the other dragon that died.
Yeah, so this is a new concept that they added, which was you can actually overheal one guy and then gain guys back. Yeah,
everyone has healing available to them.
Wait, you can overheal and gain guys back?
He means up to your
max. You can resurrect
up to your original stack. In the old game, you could only heal up one guy.
Yeah, right.
There was actually a separate
400
spell.
400 archers, and then the last, one archer has
partial hit points. Right.
You heal him for 500, he only gets 8.
Yeah, no, one of the things I would do is I would cast reinforcements, and then that would boost my numbers so that I could lose some and, you know, not suffer.
Tradition. Yeah, I know. But there's things. Those are things I do to avoid, you know, to.
But the weird timing issues are not unique to healing. You know, one round of the skirmish game I was playing, I was fighting and I forgot on the first turn to use my hero. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm sure I did that a lot, but it was the first time I really noticed it. And like, wow, my hero just lost his turn because I didn't think to use him at the same time as some other unit's mm-hmm. turn.
Yeah, I thought that was actually pretty bad. It took me a while before I was like, wait a second, it's not even giving me a turn to use my hero. You have to use it in conjunction with one of your activations.
Yeah, and you have a critical ability, and you know the enemy gets a first turn.
It
sucks.
That was, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I love is like the artifacts that you can pick up that give you spells. Like, I found one in one of my games. She gave me Chain Lightning. So, on, like, one round, I had one Chain Lightning I can cast from my spell list and plus another artifact. I completely decimated whole armies off of just this twofer.
Okay, about this Chain Lightning item. In the Necropolis campaign, mm-hmm. in the mission where you don't have any towns, you know, you're going through the dream.
Yep.
Did you get that artifact, too?
I don't remember.
Because I actually had to restart that map because it was like I was beat. I mean, I was defeated in that map. Then I realized, wait, I have this Chain Lightning spell, which I never used before. I just solely stuck with a dark
element. The first time they used Chain Lightning on me, I'm like, I need to get that ability.
Exactly. So once I got that item, and then, you know, that whole mission was a cakewalk.
Yeah.
And then I've started learning Chain Lightning after that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying the being able to cast it, usually it's some type of limiting factor to be able to only cast stuff like once a turn, but having items with charges on them is just brutal because I just, at the start of a round, I can pretty much wipe off half your army at least with two castings of Chain Lightning.
So it works really well during the campaign, and it doesn't work as well in the final battle. Chain Lightning does like.
In Skirmish, it was great. I was just beating all these camps just. Boom, boom, cast it twice, and done.
So when you get to the last hero, when you're fighting a hero in his fort, and you're dealing with stacks of hundreds and 200s, hundreds, Chain Lightning will kill 20, 30 guys. Yay. Yep.
Well, you got to breach a wall. You got to breach a wall first.
Well, you don't. So in the campaign, you don't get to breach the wall. You have to teleport over, or you just have to suck it up.
Really?
Okay. Because you don't aim your catapult, so the chance it hits the same location.
There's a skill. There's a trait that allow you to aim it.
Tactics.
Okay. Tactics, but I mean, it's still, they get, their armies are huge.
Yeah.
So you basically.
But the Chain Lightning's not hindered by walls anyways.
I don't know. I actually know
Magic that. Isn't hindered by walls.
Okay. And then it doesn't matter. Yeah.
But you're dealing with such large stacks, you know, you're 2,000 damage
is not
a lot to a stack.
Well, that's why you need to drench them first.
That's two turns. That's two heroes' turns right there.
And believe me, they're getting to launch all of their stuff at you at the same time. And you're on the wrong side of the wall, which always sucks.
Yep.
Teleport.
Well, that's what you summon.
Summon. Scrolls.
Scrolls are cheap, and they allow you to do all kinds of crazy things. One thing that was interesting was, I remember how my original complaint was like, I'm not regenerating, getting mana fast back enough. Mm-hmm. You know, there's talents that help it. But then finally, once I built the trade shop, mana potions were cheap. They're 20 gold or something like that. So I ended up, like, once I figured out, I just need to buy a huge stacks of mana potions.
Well, there's also the magic ability, the magic trait, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's the one.
There's one that it regenerates like every turn in combat.
Yeah, so 10, but I'm just saying still though. Mana used to be a problem until I figured out, build a bazaar, buy mana potions. Yeah. You'll make back your money. I mean, it's just so cheap.
So now you're on the camp where magic is as good as might then.
Yes, absolutely. I switched about halfway through. Originally, I was thinking magic's rough because I started off, it's like, I can cast three spells per week, and I'm out of mana. And I was like, this sucks. Mm-hmm. And my guy's just getting beat all the time. But then, after I figured out that whole potion thing, it's like all of a sudden stuff starts clicking better and better and better. And then I started comboing stuff with lightning and ice with water, and stuff started getting better. But until that point, I had switched over to might, where just guy walks up and starts whacking people.
In the skirmish games, I was playing might for my main hero. But in the campaign, I didn't worry about mana because you have like 600, 700 mana.
Yeah, I mean, if you,
by the end,
you just get to do whatever you want.
It sounds like magic is more powerful in general. I mean, I didn't play magic. I played might in the Necromancer campaign because I switched
her over to might. Might has a lot of passive abilities.
I think might is probably better for the big, really big fights where you need your stacks to be buffed.
I don't know.
Because you don't get...
See, what I like when I play Magic or Sanctuary, you know, I actually tried a magical one of my sub-heroes, you know, it's just like try to give him, like, I gave him Earth, you know, buff everyone's defense spell, and that could be the equivalent of Might.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get you guys have straight-up resistance and straight-up extra attack every single second that they're in.
I think Magic is more powerful in the sense that it allows you to do things that kind of break some of the rules. Like, you know, like if some monster has like some really kick-ass ability, at least with
Time Stasis.
With Sanctuary, I could freeze them or halt them in line. They couldn't move. Like they had this big dragon guy. I just froze him there and said, "I'll deal with it. I'll kill the rest of the army and leave him frozen there for a few turns." So, Magic does help. It kind of turns things. So basically, something that might call in as difficult or hard. If you freeze the stack, like one of them when I in the start of the game was deadly because it was like these two giant infernal demons, or a group of this one giant stack of infernal demons, like four or five of them, and they have like, I don't know, a couple hundred hit points each. I just froze the stack just for two turns and just kept having guys kept on keep on attacking them,
and they don't retaliate.
They never retaliated. They never even got to do anything.
Okay, well, I've exhausted everything.
Reputation.
Okay, let's talk about reputation. What's reputation?
Oh, that's new. Blood and Tears.
Oh, yeah, that's new.
Yeah.
That is new.
I mean, that didn't seem to impact me at all.
Well, yeah, you have to get pretty far into it.
So, no, in the campaign, it's lengthy. But in the skirmish game, you know, it's accelerated. Okay. You can actually, I mean,
each game I played. Everything seemed accelerated.
But I don't think I got far enough in the Blood and Tears to actually do anything. I got the passes, but I never got any of the actives. I looked at, can't scroll down, take a look. At some of the things that come down the line, but
what's nice about this one, because it does add a little bit of variety to the heroes, is that, you know, each faction has a Might hero and a Magic hero, and then they can further go into a secondary class depending on the reputation, the route they go, Blood or Tears. And each level, so you have a Might hero, and if he goes Blood, and he goes the first level Blood, then he becomes a Blood Knight or something like that, and he gets an ability, and then he goes. Then you're stuck on that route, and then you go to level two of that. Yeah, you look different, but you never really see your hero in combat, so it doesn't really matter.
I always end up being on the Blood side because, you know, to get the Blood reputation, you have to go, like, when monsters flee, you have to chase them and hunt them down, or you never negotiate, things like that. But I always chase, and I always didn't negotiate because
that's experience running away. Yes. That's how I feel too.
Yes. No,
you get experience,
no.
Let them go.
Yes.
You do?
Yes, you do. It's easy. I max out Tears, you know, 1,000 Tears in both my games.
What does Tears give you?
It's just a different route.
It's more defensive.
More defensive. So all your defensive abilities, anything, you know, the abilities, they're either neutral, Blood, or Tears.
But still,
they get powerful, and then you get a class-specific ability also.
But see, defensive has never been a great strong suite of in Heroes of Might and Magic. You want offense because you want to take down their stack first. Even in like any tactical part of Heroes of Might and Magic, if you go defensive, you're pretty much
Not exactly defensive.
It's not really defensive.
Yeah,
it's more like it's just healing and
It's certain abilities that, you know, get pumped up, and then there's still the class specific abilities too. But I don't know. I don't remember what mine were. So I only remember the Necropolis's. Blood one.
I went Tears.
So what was the Tears one?
I don't remember. I never used it.
Yeah, I didn't like the...
I got down to like four spells. And that was just a rotation. Those four. Could ignore everything else.
Yeah. So, yeah, in the skirmish mode, it's all accelerated. In Blood, you pursue armies, neutral stacks that want to run away. You pursue them. You'll get, you know, Blood points. You let them go. You get experience and you get Tears. And
do you get Blood points by just buying Blood skills?
No, I think you told me like if you use Blood skills, you can get points that way.
In the combat dialogue, I tells you when you're getting
stuff. And then Tears, if you see people who want to say, "Hey, I'll offer my services to you," this is why Tears is more expensive. If you pay them, you get Tears points. If you attack them, I don't know if you get Blood points for that.
You get Blood points.
Okay.
And then the shrines, you get to choose a defense or an offensive
ability. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's another way to
Blood for offense and Tears.
And in the campaign, there's scripted scenes that just help you build towards that path.
Like I said, I've exhausted everything I want to say.
So when you got treasure, did you pick experience or gold?
Experience. Always.
Always experience.
To build towards the dynasty.
Gold you can always get.
You always had gold.
I always maxed that experience by the end of the map. So I'm like, I'll just get gold. So
because you're playing campaign.
Playing campaign.
So yeah, I had the same problem. Mm-hmm. Where I was maxing out experience. Yeah, but
my main guy's running around.
I was hoping it was going into my dynasty pool, so I was still
expecting it. Probably it is, but I mean, at that stage, I might as well take the gold.
Actually, I don't know if you could select it at that point. I think I was
saying, it's only gold once you max your level.
Yeah.
I like how the story version of it is that you can instantly give it to some guy to train you. The gold that you find in the treasure chest. Like, he's walking around with you.
What's so interesting that we have dynasty weapons with people that aren't talking to each other. Stab each other and...
Yeah, or you can convert, you know, a fort in 1 week or whatever.
One day, not even a day.
Yeah,
instantly, right?
All right. Well, so that's Might and Magic Heroes 6. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we can talk about next month's game. Next month's game, we have a selection by Ricky. And Ricky, what'd you choose?
Company of Heroes 2.
Company of Heroes 2.
That's all I know about it.
That's all you know?
I played Company of Heroes 1 and I liked it, so.
Yeah, actually for a long while.
It looks cold. Haha. The setting is like the Russian
front.
I know that. Which is
we all played Company of Heroes quite a bit.
Just my initial look at it, though. I mean, I loaded it up just to run the performance test on it. It looks like there are a lot more traits to the units now.
I know there's a lot of DLC. There's so much I couldn't even bother reading it, and there's like 8 pages of DLC. So
I did play the test, you know, over the summer. Yeah, the beta, and I mean, it seemed like it was pretty faithful to Company of Heroes 1. And like the big mechanic difference is the weather.
Other than there was like a specialization thing.
Yeah, I mean, they changed the... Remember, they always have those, like, talent trees that you fill out while you're playing?
Uh-huh.
And they changed those.
Yeah.
I mean,
wait, talent trees that are tied to an individual unit or your army?
Like your army.
Your tank guy, guy, or an
army guy, or
an
engineer guy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that'll be interesting. If you'd like to join us in playing the game of the month and want to send in your comments or questions about the game, feel free to do so at podcast@10-hp.com.
And you might be the first.
You could also Twitter us.
Yes, you can also reach us on Twitter at 10hp podcast. They would not be the first. The first was a Shadowrun guy. Shadowrun Returns. It's been a while.
You might be the second.
You're still in the top 5.
Yes. Right?
The prestigious location. Okay, so now we're going to shift into a segment we call Bonus HP, which gives people a chance to talk about anything that they want to talk about. So we're going to start with Paul.
Okay. So my bonus HP is that I want to get people to support this great project called Outer Lands, which is by Area5.tv. Area 5 is a company It's comprised of people that used to be on the 1UP show for the most part, and they used to do a show called Co-op. But then they kind of transitioned out of that, and they went they started doing documentaries. I think one of their famous ones is the Street Fighter documentary, and then they also did one for, what's the name of that game?
Last of Us.
Yeah. And so they do great, high-quality work, and they're actually trying to start another project, Outer Lands, for a documentary basically that's on gaming culture.
It's a web series.
Yeah, and I think it's going to have 6 episodes, 1 hour each, something like that, possibly more, depending on how well the Kickstarter does. So I just encourage people to donate and And let's see if the Kickstarter can make it so we can see some great content.
Yeah, one of the recent updates that they had stated that if they get funded, it looks like Hulu will pick them up and broadcast them on their website.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I'm amazed at the type of mainstream kind of stuff. Like, I was suggesting to Paul that he watch Indie Game the Movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked if it was on Netflix, and I thought, Indie Game the Movie is not going to be on Netflix, and indeed it is on Netflix.
So streaming?
Streaming, yes. Yeah. So that was surprising to me. Okay, so my turn. Kind of torn about what to talk about today, but I'm going to go with my Xbox versus PS4. So I have both, the Xbox One and the PS4, and I got them both on release day, and got a couple of games for each of them, and I played the PS4 a whole bunch, and then I shifted to playing the Xbox, and I've put the Xbox on the TV and the PS4 on my computer, and I haven't turned on the PS4 in January. It's interesting that there's no games really to speak of that are worth
playing. Resogun?
Resogun was fun for a week or two.
Because I've heard a lot of people go back to that just, you know, to try to, like, compete score-wise.
I am not a score attack type of person.
Yeah.
Like, once I finish the level, I'm like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to finish it and get a higher score.
Yeah.
So
you're not playing with the social features of it where you're competing against your friends.
Yeah.
You don't, unless your friends are playing it. Also, none of us have PS4.
Yeah. This is a huge problem. And this is a problem with consoles in general. You know, I am playing Forza 5. Which is a racing game, every night for about 10 to 15 minutes. And it tells you, you know, what your friends' scores are and things. And I have no friends.
Right.
My friends on the showing are Arthur Geese and Elysium GWJ, which is a Gamers with Job guy. And
he's a jerk, FM right?
Guy. What's that?
No, you don't listen to the podcast. They're both
jerks.
Yeah, okay.
Like, Arthur tries to run me off the road constantly. And for whatever reason, the Elysium guy is just always way out in front.
Oh.
Are they actively playing?
No. So there's these things called Drivatars. Now, I think I'm going to now talk about Forza 5. That's going to be my bonus HP. There's these things called Drivatars. And basically, while you're playing, the game kind of captures events that not actual events from your racing, but like your tendencies. Like, if you tend to brake late and overshoot turns, it does that. If you run into people, it does that. If you prefer to take corners slowly and, you know, whatever. It has a bunch of traits and characteristics, and then it transfers those into your Drivatar, and then people race against your Drivatar. So when you're not there. So yeah. When you race, your race gets populated not with AI, but with other people's traits. And so far, I hear a lot of people calling them drunkatars, and that's pretty accurate. They're always running into each other and trying to drive each other off the road. And I think it's like this weird cyclical self-affirming system, because like, I try really hard to avoid getting in accidents, but there's this brick wall of cars at every corner, and occasionally I bump into them.
Right.
And occasionally they run into me. Does that record that I'm a rammer when I get run into? And
it's like a virus of drunk guitars, right? The one guy does it, infects everybody else with the the tendency to run into other people, which infects other people.
And so I'm like, now... Is that what happens when people race against me? Is that I try to run them off the road all the time? Because I've never gotten through a race without having like massive scratches down the side of my car and, you know, bumped fenders and whatnot. And,
Well, one of us finally buys it, you might know, but until then.
Anyway, so the Drivatar system is flawed, I think.
Is this Xbox game?
This is an Xbox game.
What do you think of the in-game purchasing features of that? I've heard it... like advertises it constantly.
So this is weird because I'm level 150, and that basically equates to 40 hours of gameplay.
Uh-huh.
And in that 40 hours, I also got a VIP membership, which gives me 50% more rewards. Because at first I was like, oh, I'm going to buy all the DLC for this, but then I quickly stopped that and like, I'm not really getting anywhere fast enough that I need to buy any DLC. So that disclaimer away, I'm getting 50% more rewards than most people.
Mm-hmm.
I have like $8 million, and the most expensive car I think is $3 million, and I only own like 40 cars, and I have no reason to spend my money. Like, there's nothing I'm not a car junkie. Maybe if I wanted to collect them all, I would have a problem. But it's just, I'm getting way more resources than I need.
Mm-hmm.
So to that end, I don't need the bonuses that come from the microtransaction systems.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a token that will give you, it's a lot like LOL. It's a lot like, buy 4 hours of double XP.
Well, there's one key difference.
What's that?
You don't pay for LOL at all.
Right.
Where you pay $60 for this game up front.
Right. I think that it's ridiculous that if you want to speed up your progress, you have to pay for it. I'm like that in general. I think that effectively selling cheat codes, and if you want to go faster, you should just be able to go faster. You shouldn't have to pay to, be advanced.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I don't think it's really necessary. Though, that said, I'm 40 hours in. So, I have more resources.
Everything that can be purchased through microtransactions, you can acquire in-game?
Yes.
Or do they only sell bonuses?
No, they sell tokens. And tokens can be used to buy expedited rewards or directly buy cars without paying for credits. Mm. And they're, like, when I bought the DLC, I got 100 tokens. And 100 tokens is like a $70,000 car. So, that's kind of the cheapest cars that you can buy. Cars are not dollars, they're credits. So, like I said, a car can cost 3 million credits. A 70,000 car would be kind of an obscure but not really uncommon thing, like, a 7 Series BMW or something that fewer people would have, because they base it all not on cost of the car but on the rarity of the car in the actual world.
Hmm.
So, like, you could buy a Ford Focus for like 15,000 credits, but then another more expensive car, but still common. You still see lots of BMWs out there. That'd be like 70,000. Anyway, that's what I get for 100 tokens. And I don't know how much 100 tokens is in actual money, but I think you buy them in lots of, like, a couple hundred. So I could see that being a couple dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
So bottom line is Xbox, yay, PS4.
Well, I was going there, but the Xbox, it's not about... It's weird. The systems are... I use the Xbox every day to watch Netflix and to use voice control and turn it on every day for that. And it's...
Me
because
too.
It's hooked to my TV, I'm playing a games a little bit. But neither of them are really being used for gaming.
They are early. They just don't have very many games.
Right.
Both of them.
The Xbox has all kinds of weird, hiccups that I hope will be ironed out. And the PlayStation doesn't seem to have that many hiccups. But then again, I don't use it that often, so maybe I'm missing out. Anyway, so far the Xbox is winning because it's actually getting used as a media center device.
Can't the PS4 be used as a media center device as well?
To a certain extent. Voice control is a big bonus to the Xbox. Mm-hmm. Even Caroline, who is 2, is learning to control the Xbox. If she could say Xbox... eloquently, or what was that?
Without screaming it?
No. What's it when you speak clearly?
Enunciated?
Yeah, if she could enunciate correctly, if she could say Xbox, she says S-Bots. If she didn't say S-Bots, she would be able to control this thing, because she knows Xbox turn on, or Xbox on, Xbox go to Netflix, Xbox sign in Chris, Xbox profile 4, she knows all these steps. And then she wouldn't be able to read, which... Netflix thing to select to play the thing she wants. She still tries to go up and push the buttons like great. On the screen.
That's great.
Like it's a touch screen thing. She's got all these tiles, right? It's yeah, Metro. Like, yeah, she should like... totally just go up and push it. Anyway, if she's that close that she could get there, if she could speak enough.
The only thing I heard about the Xbox is the Xbox trolls in like Call of Duty and stuff like that, but they named themselves like Xbox Bing or something like that. And so they do something annoying, and someone talks, says, "Xbox Bing, what are you doing?" It automatically pulls up the search and kicks them out of the game.
Right. I could see that. I've tried to Skype.
Gotta play with headphones, then that's not an issue.
No. No, it's the person they yelling at the person.
They rig the name like so the voice command kicks in.
If you saw a player named Xbox Bing,
yep.
And you were on it to talk to them, you're like, "Xbox Bing, go here."
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the guy's name is Xbox Bing. Come on.
Right.
Well, there are a lot of people who don't. So they just name some Xbox commands, and then, you know, they'll do something stupid, like they'll start knifing their own teammate, and they'll say, "Xbox Bing, stop that." And it's like, as soon as they say Xbox Bing, it pulls up the Bing search thing, and they freeze.
Heat at the moment. You forget. You start to read.
So the first update to Xbox is coming February 11th, I think. And they're adding such wonderful features that, you know, they didn't think to add in the first place as a battery indicator for your controller.
Well, yeah, it's Microsoft.
You're right. Anyway. So, 5-star reviews. We didn't get any 5-star reviews. I have checked.
Okay.
We got no reviews on iTunes.
All right.
And actually, I looked at the iTunes page today, and there's some weirdness in the descriptions. So I was just editing the RSS feed to maybe make those descriptions a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't gotten any reviews. If you leave us a review on iTunes, we will read it online, and thank you for your support. And that's it. And we'll see you next month. With Company of Heroes 2. Goodbye from 10HB.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Gooders.